So the Dhamma for today is called the Agati, for Agati. Agati means bias or partiality. Literally, it comes from the root gam, in regards to going. So it means someone who is, or a state of being gone. But gone means in the sense of not being in the middle, gone to one side, or gone out from being impartial for one or another reason. This is a fairly common teaching of the Buddha, something that's we see again and again, sort of a staple. And the four agati are chandagati, dosagati. Chandagati means appreciation. So being biased in, because of your appreciation. It doesn't quite do the word justice. Chanda is used in a stronger sense. But the problem is that chanda can be used in a positive way, can be used to talk about positive things, where you appreciate the Dhamma, for example. It's often translated as desire or liking. But the problem with that is we know that that's greed. That's loba-based. So chanda for the Dhamma is not loba-based. It's wisdom-based. So something like appreciation. But here it definitely means out of greed, out of desire. Dosagati means out of anger, biased out of anger. Mohagati means bias out of delusion. And the last one, bayagati, bias out of fear. You refer to reasons why we don't look at things objectively, why we're not able to see things clearly. If you notice, they're very much just references to the defilements. Even fear is just another kind of, I mean, it really is based on anger mind or patiga mind. But the emphasis here is, and the lesson here is, on the power of the defilements to lead to bias, lead us to make bad decisions, lead us to act in ways that are to our detriment. Act in ways that if we saw clearly, we would in no way act. And so the point is that the defilements have this power. And it's a reminder to us, it's a really good lesson to us to remember that when under the influences of the defilements, greed, anger, delusion, fear, we're quite likely to make poor decisions and not be able to see the truth clearly. And so we see this in our lives, and we see this in society, in our lives, in other people's lives quite clearly. It's a common theme of making bad choices, making bad decisions. It's something you can see on a societal level. For chanda, this is something that you actually see in religious circles. People believe in a religion, any religion, not out of wisdom, not even out of logic or reason, but simply out of liking. Maybe they like the bright colors, the music. Some religions have things that are attractive to the senses. At a deeper level, a common reason for people to believe in God is because of the feeling of protection that that belief brings. The belief that your prayers are going to be answered, the belief that there's a heaven waiting for you. Religion can often be subscribed to out of a feeling of comfort. But it's not in any way, of course, a good reason to believe in something or a good reason to follow something. Even Buddhism, in Buddhism we fall prey to this or as Buddhists, we fall prey. There's the story of Wakkali, who was very much attracted to the Buddha. We fall prey to the beautiful creations in Buddhism. There are beautiful monasteries and buildings that we've seen in other places. One thing that's kind of worth appreciating about Sri Lanka is they're not so much into that sort of thing, though. Even here you will see ordinary people will fall prey to beauty, and fall prey to the material pleasures. Now, for meditators, the key takeaway for this is that for meditators, our practice will suffer if we fall prey to desire. And this relates, of course, to pleasant feelings. I mean, it can fall prey even, we can fall prey to this, and it can suffer even just based on practical things, where we get attached to food, and we eat too much food, of course, our practice suffers. Just like in ordinary life, when people eat the wrong types of food and they get sick. As meditators, we can fall prey to desires for pleasant food or desire for pleasant sensations. Meditators will sometimes have a difficult time giving up sleep, so they find themselves sleeping too much because of how comfortable their beds are, or that sort of thing. More comfortable than sitting cross-legged. But the most glaring and problematic condition is when a meditator gets attached to pleasant feelings. And this is why we are constantly reminding the meditators to be mindful of the pleasant feelings, that there's nothing wrong with the pleasant feelings, but without being mindful, you'll fall prey to chandagati, this bias of appreciation or liking. You like the pleasant feelings, and it creates so much problem for your mindfulness practice. First of all, you stop being mindful because it's pleasant. Why do you have to be mindful? Why do you have to train? Why do you have to do something? It's good already. Isn't this the goal? Secondly, you cultivate further liking of it. The more you like something, the more you reaffirm that liking and the wanting. And then when it's gone, you're trying to cultivate it. Disappointed when it's not there. Pleasant feelings are a problem. Ultimately, we just have to be careful about our desire and understand that not only does desire lead to addiction, but it also leads to a warped sense of reality. It leads you to see things in a way that is not based on wisdom or clarity. Dosagati, just like greed, anger is another reason for having distorted perceptions. In society, we see how this leads to political violence, can lead to societal violence where people hate each other out of racism or class hatred, hating on each other for various reasons. We see in how it leads to violence. Well, obviously anger leads to violence, but it leads to violence against those we love. You can see how people who are otherwise very much attracted to each other can be violent towards each other, how we're violent towards our parents, or parents are violent towards our children, and so on. Partners are violent towards each other when they've made a claim that they love each other. It blinds us, anger blinds us. Anger can blind us in terms of finding the right teaching as well. We can have anger towards a person and not appreciate the things that they say. Anger can blind us to the truth. And people who even were angry towards the Buddha and were unable to appreciate his teachings. And of course, the Buddha had no agati, and so he was able to listen and hear their teachings. Ultimately, as a meditator, though, this relates to our experience of unpleasant feelings, painful feelings. Our aversion to them is a big hindrance, will prevent us from seeing clearly. There's a real lesson to be had for meditators that the real reason why we suffer from painful experiences or from any experience is our inability to face the experiences. It's not our inability to remove the experiences. The real lesson and the real goal is to face them. When you begin to face pain, you gradually over time begin to see that the pain isn't the problem, that the pain actually never was the problem. It doesn't matter how much pain you experience, the suffering really only comes from the mind, and the mind is disliking the pain. And this goes doubly for experiences that are not intrinsically painful. Memories, we say painful memories. But memories are simply experiences. They're sights or sounds or thoughts. They have no intrinsic quality of being dislikable. Because our inability to face them gives them power. And this comes, of course, from anger and aversion. When we dislike something, we're unable to see it clearly, we're unable to understand it, and therefore we're unable to free ourselves from the power it has over us. It's habit-forming. The more anger there is, the more it becomes a knee-jerk reaction. Mohagati, bias out of delusion. This one we see in society, we see in religion. We see in the arrogance and conceit of those who think they know better than others. A lot of bias and bigotry comes from arrogance and comes from ignorance and delusion. Right? Racism, for example, the idea that one race is superior to the other, or the disdain for any one of any race. This is something that you find as a white monk, that often people are not interested in listening to what you have to say because you're not a real Buddhist monk, or you're not what they're used to. It's not what they're looking for. But you see it across the board. We have any number of biases. People have biases about age. Sometimes people have biases against old people. Someone is old and they think that they're senile, laughable. They don't want to listen to old people, which is really scary. But the same goes for young people. People don't want to listen to them just because they're young. And it's not a reason to not listen to someone. Of course, there's reason to believe that someone older will have more life experience, but it certainly doesn't immediately make them wiser. It's hard hard to be free from this. There's a Lumpo Chodok tells this story of how his teacher, Lumpo Chodok was a very well-learned monk, and his teacher, when he went to practice Vipassana meditation, his teacher said, you know, if I had to take money from my students, for the people who had no learning whatsoever, I would charge them 6 baht. You know, 6 baht was a lot back then. And if they had learning, I would charge them 12 baht. And Lumpo Chodok immediately, he said, Ajahn, that's not fair. And he said, sure, it's fair. Those who have studied a lot argue with their teachers. Make it harder to teach. And he realized right away that that was exactly what he was doing. It's hard if you have a lot of learning. It's hard to give up this and to see through your own belief that you know better than everyone, or you know right away what's happening. To appreciate that you might not know something is hard. Moha is very much related to neutral feelings. When a meditator feels calm, not only will they like it, but they'll also get these beliefs that somehow this is something special. How can I be wrong if I feel calm? But calm can be associated with delusion. Calm can even be associated with greed. Sometimes it's hard to see the greed when you have a calm or neutral feeling. but how many people in various religious and spiritual traditions thought they were enlightened, people that the Buddha met who thought they were enlightened, often because of the calm and peaceful states that they had attained. Neutral feeling and delusion very much associated. So when a meditator feels calm or feels peaceful, even when they have a very strong and fixed state of mind, they have to be careful that they don't become deluded and think that somehow this is a sign of enlightenment or so on. Of course, with enlightenment comes not just calm feelings, but also happy feelings. But a person who is enlightened, a fully enlightened being, will not have any attachment or belief or conceit based on those feelings. They will constantly see those feelings as impermanent, unsatisfying, uncontrollable. Not me, not mine. As delusion is where you see things as me and mine, I. Bhayagati is partiality based on fear. So, based on fear, we're unable to face things. Based on fear, people will even believe in religion. Fear will lead people to be unable to let go of wrong views. People believe in God because of the fear of going to hell. I once had someone come up to me at the end of a Buddhist studies class in university. They knew I was Buddhist. I wasn't a monk at the time. And they said, "Oh, it's such a relief, this idea of reincarnation. It means you have another chance." She was Christian, Catholic, brought up Catholic. For her, it was either hell or heaven after, and you only had this very short time on earth to figure it out. And it can be, of course, so oppressive, scary to have to face. So it was, whereas with Buddhists, we often think of reincarnation as sort of a scary thing. Oh yes, if I'm not careful, I might come back in the wrong way. For her, it was liberating. I can do this forever. It means I have infinite number of chances, which is really true. It's an insightful take. But yes, the goal is not to be reborn, but most people will have to be reborn, and that can be a reassurance for us. We don't have to be stressed. We don't have to enter into Buddhism out of fear. We only have to do good, cultivate goodness, cultivate clarity and harmony in our minds. And we're considered to be on the right path. It's not a question of this life or the next life. The more we dedicate ourselves to good things, the closer we'll come to goodness. Now, there is, of course, some room for things approaching fear, because while fear is an unwholesome state of mind, there's a sense of urgency that's valuable. Obviously, when we are reborn, we don't know where we're going to go. We don't know if for sure we're going to have another opportunity like the opportunity we have in this life. So we absolutely should be wary or vigilant, or very much have a sense of urgency. But fear comes up for meditators. Well, in practical sense, meditators are afraid of things like snakes and spiders and ghosts. These things can, of course, be a challenge for people to undertake an intensive meditation course. Some people are afraid. Some people are even afraid of Buddhism. And this is a good example of agati, because they might hear about the theories and appreciate the theories, but be afraid to actually practice them. When they hear about things like Nibbana, even when they hear about the teachings on non-self, it can be scary, because they think, well, what will happen to myself? This, of course, is, there were people who came to the Buddha and asked these questions as well. People who are afraid of giving up attachment, they think, wow, giving up attachment, what about all the things that I love? It shows how fear can distort things and prevent you from appreciating the good. Buddhism is not pushing anyone to do anything. It's telling the truth that our attachment to things doesn't lead to happiness, it leads to suffering. And the practice of enlightenment leads to greater peace and happiness. But our fear can hide that from us. As far as spiders, snakes and ghosts and so on, it's a good example of how we're unable to see things objectively. A small spider in the corner of your room is probably the least of your worries in life. And yet this irrational fear can be so consuming for some people. I know a woman who's afraid of mice. That's a common fear, I guess. And it's quite remarkable because there's nothing, this isn't a Buddhist, this isn't a teaching about Buddhist meditation, but it is a good teaching to help us appreciate the power of fear to create distorted perceptions. Because as meditators, of course, our fear also plays a part. Again, we can be afraid of practice, afraid of meditation, but quite commonly, even for those who do undertake meditation, we can be afraid of what is strange. Meditators are constantly being faced with strange experiences. You know, we're undertaking something novel or new, unfamiliar, and so they can enter it with a certain trepidation, and there will arise fear when something strange arises, strange mental experiences, strange physical experiences. And why I mention this, why this is important, is because this is a key aspect of our practice, seeing the unpredictable, getting a sense that life is indeed unpredictable. This is a teaching on impermanence. And so it's a common experience for meditators, and it's an important experience for meditators to experience the strange and to become familiar with what is strange, be familiar with the potential for strange things to occur, for the unexpected to arise. Because that's the key, is that expectations are the cause for suffering. When you expect things to be a certain way, it can be because of a misunderstanding of stability, but it can also be a misunderstanding of control, thinking that things should go according to your expectations. And this delusion that somehow we are in control. So it's an important lesson for meditators to appreciate and to face what is strange. The question isn't why did it happen or what is it, or what does it mean, or something like that. The lesson is that this is the nature of reality, that life is unpredictable. Strange things can and will happen. So our practice is very much for overcoming the defilements, obviously, but as a corollary, it's very much about gaining an unbiased understanding of reality. And that's one of the very important aspects of the defilements, that they prevent us from seeing clearly. The Buddha likened it to a pot of water. If the pot of water is boiling, you can't see clearly. If the pot of water is full of color, dye, you can't see clearly. If it's buffeted by waves or wind, you can't see clearly. If it's dirty, you can't see clearly. All of these things, the defilements, are what cloud the mind, what lead to agati. So, it's an important reminder and teaching of the Buddha, and that's the Dhamma for today.